Hey everyone, we're the Blood and Platelets Podcast, and we're back. After a bit of a hiatus, Brandon, Alex, and Chrissy are back and ready to spread those cancer-killing, survivor-inspired good vibes. We're changing it up a bit, expanding our circle beyond our three cancer-surviving stories, and we'll be hosting guests each new episode to share their story and experience with the goal of spreading healing vibes and helping others in need of support. With that said, let's get into it.
This is our first sort of reboot of the podcast where we're bringing on new people to talk and tell their story and like create these episodes that have like other perspectives, right? So yours is really cool and unique because you are about to enter into such a life-changing experience, right? And so your perspective is very different than who we will bring on in the future of like other survivors or doctors or volunteers, et cetera. So that's sort of our goal, is to widen like the stories that happen out here. So why don't you, Krishna, why don't you sort of tell us your story? Because I'm sure as we put this podcast out too, there could be other people listening where they're about to approach their transplant. So I'm sure you're having lots of different experiences. But why don't you tell us sort of like how, what your diagnosis is, when it happened, and sort of leading up to what's going to happen in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, sure. So I was diagnosed with aplastic anemia at the age of 2. Wow. So I've been kind of living with this for a very long time. Yeah. The story is kind of crazy, though. Even when I tell it, I don't really think it's like my story. I feel like I'm telling somebody else's story.
Right.
But when I was younger, I went to India. And, you know, this part of the story is kind of hearsay from what everyone has kind of told me. But apparently I had gotten sick. And it's said that, you know, I was given malaria medication. Which basically one of the side effects of quinine based medications is that it can stop your bone marrow from working. So if,
really?
Wow. Yeah, so I don't know what actually right. happened, but essentially I came back to the States when I was about 2. And apparently my parents didn't even know. I just found out my parents didn't even know that I was sick. The rest of my family, you know, brought me back to the States from India. And my mom told me at the airport, she was like, you know, she's 2, she's big enough to walk, like put her down, let her walk. And everyone's like, no, she's really tired. Like the trip took a toll on her. We're just going to carry her. So anyhow, they took me to the pediatrician, ran tests, and then they immediately sent me to UCLA where they did, you know, further testing and determined that it was aplastic anemia. So, from that point on till about 6, I was transfusion dependent. So weekly blood transfusions, weekly platelet transfusions. And I remember bits and pieces of that. You know, I don't remember everything that happened at that time. The aplastic anemia was definitely more severe, symptomatically at least. Mm-hmm. You know, I do remember waking up in the middle of the night and like my pillow being covered with blood because it would kind of just come out of my mouth, my nose, bruising, fatigue, all of those things. Mm-hmm. And then, so I was transfusion dependent and the doctors, you know, told my parents that I couldn't be transfusion dependent for very long because with the blood transfusions, you know, it could lead to iron overdose. And then with the platelet transfusions, it can be refractory. So it's like, if I really needed one, and they gave me a platelet transfusion, it may not done what it needs to do.
Uh-huh.
That's when they said that I needed a bone marrow transplant. But again, similar to Alex, when they went searching for a bone marrow, they couldn't find one. And this was back in like the early 90s, right? So
how old were you when they said you needed a transplant?
I'm not quite sure exactly how old. It was okay. Somewhere between
when you were young, quite young.
It was somewhere between like probably 4 and 6 or somewhere.
Okay.
So they couldn't find a match. And you know, the world was not as connected as it is now, right? Sure. And so it was much harder back then. So they couldn't find a match. And then the doctors finally had told my parents that brother-sister bone marrows, there's a possibility of brother-sister bone marrow matching. At this point, my parents didn't really have plans for another child because, you know, they already had this huge medical problem on their hands. They were brand new to this country. So it was a lot going on. And then also they didn't know if what I had was genetic. The other question is just like, do we have another child? And this child also has the same problem. But when the doctors kind of approached my parents with the whole brother-sister bone marrow matching, you know, that's when they decided to have another child, which is who Brandon knows is my younger brother, Keyshawn.
Oh my God, you're the movie, My Sister's Keeper. There's a movie about this. Oh my gosh, Krishna, you're the real life version of it.
So then my brother was born, and you know, just recently my mom told me that leading up to her due date with my brother was very, very stressful for her because as far as she was concerned, I was transfusion dependent weekly and having a newborn, like, you know, it's stressful. So she told me that the week before she was supposed to go in, she took me to UCLA to get my transfusion as normal. And then, you know, my brother came, all of that happened. And then she eventually, you know, we went back to UCLA. And before every transfusion, they would obviously do the blood test to see where the levels were. And when we went back to the hospital after my brother was born, my blood levels had not dropped. They didn't increase, but they had not dropped. So since the day that my younger brother was born, I had not gotten a blood transfusion. Yeah.
No way.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know that.
Yeah, okay. My younger brother, he's a bit of a miracle child in our family.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So I had, I you know, since that age of, I guess it was like around 6 years old, I had no blood transfusions, no platelet transfusions, nothing. So it, you know, there's a part where it's Keyshawn brought us good luck and I didn't get transfusions,
yeah. But
also at the same time, you know, I'm Indian, so Ayurvedic medication is a huge thing. So at the same time, my parents knew some people in India who, you know, knew this Ayurvedic doctor and they trusted him and believed in him. And so they decided to try this therapy or this medication. It was a powder that you mixed in honey. I have no idea what it was.
But it's all natural, right? That's the whole thing. Natural. All natural. Wow.
And so I was also, you know, like as UCLA was treating me, I was also taking this natural medication on the side. So, you know, we're not really sure what worked.
Yeah.
Amazing. And so we kind of just went with it. So then my levels throughout life, you know, my levels were always low. I was always under the eye of a hematologist, whether it was 3 month follow-up, 6 month follow-up, whatever. I was always with the hematologist. So I went on living life like normal, basically. And then in 2021 is when I just kind of started feeling off. So, you know, I had gone to Vegas and I came back from Vegas and went to work and everyone was just like, oh man, Krishna, like, how hard did you party? Like, you look like shit. and the truth was I actually didn't party much because I just wasn't feeling right.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, I kind of went with that and thought maybe like, you know, I'm in my 30s. You know, I had a couple of days of sleeping late and drinking and stuff. So I was like, maybe it's just that I'm just tired. My body needs to recover. But 2 days after coming back from the trip, I started, you know, getting dizzy. And I actually had to pull. I was driving when my dizzy spells happened. And so at this one point, I had to pull into a gas station and call my boyfriend and say, you need to come pick me up. Like, we need to go to urgent care. So we go to urgent care. And I was under the impression, like, you know, they'll give me some IV hydration and I'll be on my way. And, you know, we'll continue. Sure. When I was there, they obviously did, you know, full panel blood work. And the nurse comes in and goes, you need to go to the ER right now. And I'm like, I'm not going to the ER. Like, we're just coming out of COVID. Everyone's sick.
Yeah, like, right.
Anyone that's not feeling well is at the ER.
Yeah, it's the last place you want to go.
Exactly. So I kind of fought with the ER nurse and I was like, I'm not going. Like, you can set me up at an infusion center, but I'm not going to the ER.
Yeah.
But at that point, my hemoglobin had dropped to, I want to say somewhere between the high six or the low sevens.
Oh, wow.
So it was pretty low. Yeah. So, you know, my hematology team got on it. 2 days later, I had an appointment at the infusion center, and that was my first blood transfusion in 30 plus years.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. So I got, I think, 2 units that day. I remember I was there for a full 8 hours. The nurses at the infusion center were like, Krishna, you know, you can get up and walk around. And I'm like, I can't. I was like, I literally cannot get up right now. Yeah. Like, I'm so tired.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where it all started, you know? So I did what I had to do to feel better immediately.
Sure.
And then my hematologist was like, Krishna, we need to do a bone marrow biopsy. And yeah. I was not down because I know what bone marrow biopsy feels like. So
yeah.
I made a deal with the doctor. So my deal was that we were going to monitor the blood work monthly. And if the levels continued to drop, then I would let him do the bone marrow biopsy. So of course the levels started to drop.
Uh-huh.
Platelets started to drop, white blood cells, everything. Mm-hmm. That's when they did the biopsy. And then that's when they determined. So this was now January of 22.
Okay.
So he let me do my thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
So in January is when I had my first appointment for transplant.
Okay.
And then we found a donor. We found a donor around October was supposed to be my transplant, my initial transplant date.
Okay.
So
your brother's not your donor.
No, ironically, my brother didn't even match. He's a half a match.
Wow.
But I think it was in one of the podcast episodes where there's like minor matches and major mismatches.
Mm-hmm.
So he's
mm-hmm.
like a half match, but I think there might be like a
there were major mismatches. Yeah.
So he cannot even be a match.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, that's crazy. Okay.
Yeah. So they found a donor. Was all set to go. You know, I did all my pre-workup, everything, the bio, or I was about to go to biopsy. And I got a call, like I had already taken my Ativan to kind of chill me out before biopsy.
Yeah.
And we're driving over there and my nurse coordinator calls me and she's like, Krishna, don't go. She's like, everything's canceled. She's like, your antibodies are too hot. No, sorry. At that time, the donor couldn't confirm the date that they thought that was going to be confirmed.
Oh, okay. Right.
So it got canceled.
Okay.
And whatever. Then it got rescheduled for beginning of December. And then around like a few weeks before I was supposed to go into the hospital, before I was supposed to be admitted for transplant, I had to have like emergency surgery because I had an abscess that I needed surgery for. Well, at that point, the surgeons were like, her platelets and blood and red blood cells are too low, or hemoglobin's too low. They're like, we're not going to touch her until she gets transfused. So they gave me 2 units there. And then at that point, I had my first platelet transfusion since I was younger.
Oh, okay.
And I don't know if that is what caused like my HLA antibodies to go higher or what mm-hmm. happened. But again, I was set to go in and maybe about a couple weeks before admission, they called me and they were like, you know, first I knew something was wrong because they called and they said, we need you to do all these extra tests like right away. Like you need to go in and get them done.
Right.
And I'm like, something doesn't seem right. So I got those done and then eventually got the phone call of, hey, we're going to have to hold off on transplant because some of your levels don't look right. So then that was my second cancellation on.
Oh my treatment. Gosh. What an emotional roller coaster.
Yeah, it was bad. And so I think I've kind of like created this like block.
Sure.
Me and transplant at this point, you know?
Yeah.
So at this point I had already gone on disability. I already, you know, I was on leave from work and all of that. So I was literally sitting here just thinking about, okay, what's going to happen next? What do I do next? And then, so the doctors, you know, at City of Hope, I guess, met, and they were going to do something called desensitization, which is almost like dialysis. Like, so they would hit me with the chemo and try to kill off as much as they could.
Okay.
And then they would essentially do something kind of like dialysis or plasma exchange, where like, well, not dialysis, but plasma exchange, where they would kind of take my blood out from one vein, run it through a machine, and try to pull out all the antibodies.
Right.
And put it back
in. The blood wash.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it turned out that my antibody levels were just so high that even doing that process would have, like, the chance of rejection was just way too high.
Right.
So at that point, they told me, you know, Krishna, just go back to work, like, just go back to life, because we don't know when we're going to find your new donor.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's been a lot.
Yeah. The emotional roller coaster of this back and forth has had to have been just crazy. Yeah,
it was hard. It was really tough. And I think the only reason I was able to pull through is because I kept myself busy with work. You know, the second I got the okay to be able to go back to work or, you know, just live life, that's what I did, because I couldn't just sit around and think about it.
Right.
So I went back to work, literally just maybe for like a month, and then in December, end of December, like right after Christmas, they called me again and they were like, Krishna, now we have a new donor for you. So the first donor was completely out of the question.
Wow.
And then I had to go back and find another donor.
Amazing that they did though.
So quickly.
One is hard. Yeah. And two,
so quickly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, great.
So that was really exciting. But so I'm back on leave.
Okay.
And hopefully, but this time I didn't, you know, the first time I did it, I took off like a few weeks before transplant, because I was like, I need to get set up. I want to relax. I want to, you know, do things. But this time I basically just took 2 weeks off, or maybe like a week. And I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to go in. Like, I'm not even going to prepare. I'm just going to walk in there with a book bag and we'll see what happens.
Enough. wow.
Yeah, that's my story. I mean, you know, a lot has happened in between. But that's kind of how I ended up here. So
I have some questions. So like, so you're about to go in. You do have a date for admission.
Mm-hmm.
Like a couple weeks.
Yeah.
And so have you done all your prep stuff for this, for the transplant? So it looks like everything should be going forward as planned.
Yes.
At this point.
And I got my Welcome to City of Hope email today. I've never made it that far. I texted Brandon.
Okay, so this is great. Good. Okay, good. Yes,
so we're one step further than we were last time.
Yeah. And physically, how are you feeling? Are you feeling are you feeling symptomatic? Do you feel like the, you know, as tired as you were? Are you getting the transfusions right now consistently?
My last transfusion was about, I think, 3 weeks ago.
Okay.
About 3 weeks ago. So I'm feeling pretty good right now. Good. I'm not tired.
You look good. You look great.
So like I'm feeling really good. I just hope that I can get into the hospital before the levels drop so much, because at that point I'm just like, you know, I don't want to do anything. Yeah. I don't want to deal with anybody. And so I want to be in a good mood when I go in.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I think that's a great goal to have. I think that you're going to have lots of different emotions that happen that day of admission. You know, I think that that's something that you should give yourself space to just experience and allow, you know, because it is so many different things that are happening in your mind. And the biggest thing that the three of us have always talked about that we find is the common thread across everyone who goes through this experience is the biggest fear is the unknown. You know, there's a lot of things that you've never gone through. You don't know what it is like. You've never gone through full body radiation. You've never gone through, you know, certain things. And the unknown, at least on my, when I was preparing for the transplant, I had a very similar lead up like you, not in terms of losing a donor, but it took 10 years for me to find a donor. But it, in that time, then technology advanced, which was amazing. But like my brother was supposed to be mine. And then, through the workup, they found out that when he was younger, he had had this, you know, autoimmune disorder. And it, like, then it was decided, well, that's not a good thing. We can't use him. So then it was like sort of that back and forth. So I understand that. But for me, I think, you know, there was a lot of that unknown fear, you know, well, what does this mean? What does that mean? And what does this feel like? What does that feel like? And I remember sitting in my driveway one night and I was on the phone with Alex and I was like, well, so what's it feel like? What's it gonna, does it hurt? What does it hurt?
You know, and the other thing too, I think, is that everybody, like, even though, you know, the three of you may have that, like, experienced it a certain way, somebody else may experience it completely different. So, like,
absolutely,
that's even harder because it's like, I want to ask everybody for their opinion, and then I'm gonna be like, everybody lied to me, like, I don't feel anything.
Yeah. I mean, I think that the thing that we've also talked about as a group before is like, there are commonalities. Like, there is going to be shared experience. You're going to go through things that we've gone through, and you're going to be like, yeah, they were right about that. There's going to be things though that we've gone through that you might not, or that you will go through that we haven't gone through. And I've always told every patient that I've spoken to is like, you are Krishna. There's no one else. Krishna Patel is, there's no one else. So your experience is going to be specific to you because every patient is different and every patient does have a different experience in one sense or the other. But I think, you know, holistically, there are emotional experiences that definitely we all went through that we certainly want to give you the time to ask us like your questions. But yeah, I think you know, your story is incredible. It's amazing. The fact, what's blowing my mind is your brother being born and you all of a sudden not having any issues. That is just insane. But
I can see that going to Keyshawn's head.
Yeah. Except he's not the donor. It's like, what? Yeah. But, you know, that's incredible. And I think that, I think your outlook, certainly from where you've described everything, is, you know, you're definitely, you know, you can tell you're very strong. You know, you've dealt with this for a long time. And this is the next phase. And this is the phase that starts the road to recovery, which I think is really the thing that you keep your eye on is, you know, this is what's going to get you to that point past aplastic anemia. You won't have it anymore after this. Right. So like, that's such a huge, right. Exactly. And that's like, you know, I think for anyone in the transplant world, it's like, I always found for me, focusing on that was super helpful. It was like, okay, this, even though it's going to be hard, this process is going to be hard, what it's going to achieve on the other side of it, and there are so many people on the other side of it, is health, is vibrancy, is life, is a second chance at life, right? So I think that, you know, you are, I'm really excited for you. I'm really happy and excited for you.
I'm excited too. You know, I was actually thinking about it. So I have a lot of, you know, no matter how much anyone says, oh, you know, keep yourself busy, don't think about it. I mean, 2 weeks, I'm a week away, almost a week away from admission. So it doesn't matter what I'm doing. It's always in the back of my mind, right? Like, that's the only thing I really think about right now.
Of course.
I think the one thing that I'm probably most excited about, you know, I know the journey is going to be so hard, but I think the one thing that I'm really excited about, and I've been thinking about a lot lately, is this idea, or, you know, this goal of being normal. Because I was diagnosed at 2, right? Yeah. I've had this problem, like, even before I could remember. So what my normal is probably not what normal of, like, normal functioning bone marrow is.
Yeah.
And I was, like, thinking about that the other day, because I was, like, when I see, like, my younger brother or my mom or, you know, people doing, like, 10 gazillion things a day, I'm, like, how do people do this? And they stress me out, because I'm, like, how are you able to do all these things? Like, are you not tired? And I just keep focusing on the fact that, like, maybe I can be that person now. Because, you know, I'll have, like, you know, as if everything goes well, when, I mean, it will. I think that's what I'm most excited about. What more can I do? Because I can already do a good amount, but I want to do more.
Yeah.
So
I think anytime you have a long experience with a health disease, crisis, virus, whatever, that sort of normalcy changes, right? Like, I had mine for 15 years and I felt the same way. It was like, this is all I know.
Yeah, that's your normal.
And I'll tell you, Krishna, about, I think it took a good year. Yeah, a good, like, year post transplant. I remember we were hiking, my boyfriend and I were hiking, and I didn't feel the lack of oxygen the way I always remember, you know, like, I'd be huffing and puffing just going up one flight of stairs.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was like one of those things where I'm like, oh my God, this is what it feels like for normal people, you know, because you're like, your normal is basically surviving at an altitude of like 12,000 feet. To put it for, like, other people perspective that are listening, like, your normal is what you feel like at 12,000 feet elevation. That's where your blood is right now. That's how thin it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great. That makes so much sense.
Yeah. Well, you'll get there. What are some of the things that we can help answer for you? I know that, like, I would love to give Alex and Brandon more. I've been hogging you a little bit.
No, but you're relate good.
So much to what you're
you relate, doing. Yeah.
But what are some of those things? Because I think that they have some really great perspective, and I will say that they've helped me so much. Yeah. So what are some of those questions that you would love to kind of?
Yes, I know one question you had was about, like, how you feel after the transplant, right? Like.
Yeah, so it was more like, so they give it to you through an infusion, right? So like, do you actually feel anything, or is it just kind of like a blood transplant? I mean, transfusion.
Exactly what it looks like, and how it felt like. You don't feel anything. It's literally just like a blood transfusion or platelet transfusion.
Like, you know, when you had your PICC line in.
Yeah.
You feel that it's there.
Okay. So when they put it in, they numb you up. So like, Alex and I had PICC lines. Brandon had a Hickman.
I had a port.
Yeah, Hickman. Okay.
So the PICC line, because I was nervous about that. I was like, oh my God, this is going to hurt. It did not hurt. It felt a little weird.
Yeah.
It felt just kind of strange, but like, they numb it. So like, you don't feel it going in. I remember the first night I had, like, when I went home, because I had it put in prior to when I got admitted.
Yeah, and that's what I'm doing too.
Okay, yeah. So when I went home, I think it was more like the mental part of it.
Yeah.
Where I was like, oh, do I feel this? Oh, I don't know. Is this weird? Am I going to, like, move and it's going to puncture my heart?
Yeah, is it going to come out or fall out?
Yeah. And it doesn't. I mean, it's very secure. It literally took me maybe 2-3 days
to get used
to like not even notice it anymore.
Yeah. Okay.
And then it just kind of became part of me.
Yeah.
So much pain associated with it.
Yeah. There's not much pain at all.
Okay. Good.
Yeah.
And you know, one of the things I wanted to ask you guys is like, from your experiences, what was the most difficult? Like, you know, I know the entire journey is difficult, but is there any like one thing that stands out for you guys that was like your most difficult and you're just like, I don't want to do this? And then like, how did you kind of push through?
Alex,
yeah. I mean, it was quite a while ago, eight years, but like right after my transplant, I remember I had a lot of infections and different organs in my body, and you know, I had a lot of pain. So I was taking a lot of like mm-hmm. morphine and Dilaudid and just painkillers. And I you know, after the radiation, I had like no white blood cells, no platelets, or very low, no red blood cells. So my body wasn't functioning nice. Very well. And I've never experienced that kind of suffering or pain in the body. And mm-hmm. then, you know, being tied down to the hospital with all the tubes and the PICC lines and being trapped in a room, you know, a hospital room for so many days, not being able to go outside. And it wasn't just physical, it was also very like mentally and emotionally difficult. I remember there were times when I just felt like as much as I try to endure it, I felt like I wanted to give up, and I had to just tell myself, like, you know, I can't, I have to survive, I have to live. It's not just for me, it's for my family, it's for my mom. It was, you know, and that aspect of it gave me a lot of strength to fight on. And I feel like I've seen I've met a lot of cancer patients, some who didn't make it and some who did make it. And this is just my perspective. I feel like it was the mental strength of the few who survived that kept them going. Just keep on having faith. Just trust your doctors, trust your body, and you know, believe in miracles. And and that's really kind of how I got through it.
You can see, Krishna, why I would call Alex for my pep talks, because I'd be like, okay, I need my Buddha now. I need my Buddha to tell me, like, get in the right frame of mind, you know. The physicality actually was a little bit more difficult for me in the transplant process. Going through radiation was something I didn't understand what it would be like. It's unique in itself. It does not hurt by any means, so don't have fear of that. But, you know, you're strapped into a harness, you have to stand there, you are put in a giant microwave. That was one of the most difficult parts of the whole process for me.
Since you're standing during radiation, like, did you ever feel like, oh, like, I'm just gonna collapse right here? I don't know, I envisioned myself like you described, like sitting and like or standing there and being like harnessed in, and I just like envisioned myself being like, oh, I don't feel like doing this, and like collapsing. Like,
yeah, so that is why they have the harness there, is to help provide you in an upright position.
Uh-huh.
There are, for me, not only did I feel weak, but it was also like a level of like claustrophobic. I'm not claustrophobic.
Well, I'm so claustrophobic. So that was the other thing I was going to ask you.
So like you have this thick plastic shield in front of you and in back of you. Now, it's not like you can't see through it, so it's not like you're in some kind of tunnel.
Yeah.
But it is very close to you, and so that physically is difficult. And I think I spoke with Alex about this. That was one of my biggest fears, was going into this, was mm-hmm. what the hell is full body radiation and what does that feel like? Brandon, do you have anything to add there?
No, it's kind of piggybacking on what Alex was saying, but my experience was totally different because I was 13, so I really didn't know what was going on. I think my mind was just focused on like, when am I going to get better? Because I want to go play basketball again. Like, basketball was the big thing at that time. So all I was thinking, okay, when is this going to kick in so I can get better and go play basketball? So I wasn't thinking of anything negative. It was all like down the road, like, okay, I need this to like kick in now so I can go play basketball. Like, that's all I want to do. So just looking forward, to like what was going to make me happy, like knowing once I'm out of the hospital, I think is what helped me being at that age. I wasn't thinking like spiritually like Alex, I wasn't meditating. It was just basketball, like thinking of things that.
That was your positive, right?
That was my, exactly.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's a little different, but the same at the same time, the same.
And I agree. Like, I feel like the common theme here is, and you know, I believe with you guys is, the physical follows the mental, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like if you're in good spirits, you're happy, kind of Alex, like what you were saying is that, you know, with some people who may survive something because their mental strength is there. I'm a huge supporter of that and believe in that, actually.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm so glad that I have you guys to like talk about this, because I like constantly think about these things in my head all day long, right? Sure. Especially now that we're getting much closer.
The other side of it is very important to acknowledge and let have space too, because it's hard to stay positive every single day.
Yeah.
Of the journey. And there were many times where I had not positive thoughts. Right. And there were many times where, you know, you have to face realities of this is a life or death type of situation. Mm-hmm. And that's very heavy to process. I think that where you find survivors like us talking about our success is because we did find that deep down where it was like that will to live.
Yeah,
which is exactly what you're talking about. But that's not to say that you're going to feel that every single day, every minute of the day. And I think it's important to be okay with that. I think the other part of it, though, that is important is that.
So I know, I understand what you're saying completely. And to be quite honest, like even those 2 days, I was just like, you know, upset at the world. On the third day, I did feel better because I let it out. I let it.
Exactly.
I released it, basically.
Releasing is a great way to say it. You got to release these emotions, because if you don't allow them to surface and you don't allow yourself to experience them, then it does start to bottle up. It does start to fester. It does start to manifest in a different way. And that goes back to like Alex's point of your cells, you know, they respond, your body responds to this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Things keep you busy. Yeah, what you want to do.
Yeah. Oh. And Krishna, I mean, I don't, you know, while we're doing the podcast 100%, this is like, you know, an episode, but all three of us are more than happy to continue talking to you.
Thank you.
Guys. As you get set up and get ready. So if there's anything, I have your email from the email you sent Brandon. So if it's okay with you, I'll email you my cell phone. And you can text at any time, you can, you know, anything you need.
That would be lovely.
Yeah, I can put us in a chat. Yes, I'm sending the group text right now, so you'll have all of our numbers in like 2 seconds.
That sounds good. Cause I feel like sometimes if I'm just like not, I feel just in life in general, I feel like I do okay with something happens, I vent it out or I bitch about it real quick. And then once it's out there, then I'm over it. And so I'm hoping that I can apply that same way of doing things while I'm in the hospital. So, and I feel more comfortable with you guys because you guys have been there. So you'll know what I'm talking about. Everyone else. Yeah. Okay. Crazy. Stop texting me.
Well, we're not going to think you're crazy.
you'll know what I'm talking about.
We'd be happy and we'd be honored to support you through this.
That would be really cool. Thank you guys. I really appreciate it.
Of course.